We have Elder Otis Jones here tonight as our first teacher, and I have a great deal of love and respect for Brother Jones. Appreciate his teaching. Always enjoy hearing him come to our winter Bible study from year to year and bring the lessons that he does. And I love to be around Brother Jones. He's just a pleasant person to be around, and I'm thankful to have him here tonight, and I want to ask you to give your attention now for a while to the word of the Lord, and please pray for our brother as he comes to stand before us. So, Brother Otis.
Many of the earlier lessons talked about crossing lines. This lesson described lines of kindness between David and Mephibosheth. I have trouble with that word, and I'm sorry. But it's talk about lines of kindness. Now, these lines of kindness that we talk about, it's defined as we begin to get into it because the Scriptures tell us that. But I'd like to look at the definition of two words before we get too far into it. And first, I'd like to look at lines, the line. In other words, if you look at the line, very often you'll find that the line is something that goes from one place to another. And that's what we normally think of. It's just a really part of a line, because if you use the definition that's normally used in math and geometry, it is a line is of no width and no depth, and it lasts forever. From everlasting to everlasting. So you see, that line, as we begin to talk about it, we'll come back to that a little bit. And also, I'd like to now talk about kindness a little bit. If you want to look at the definition of kindness, the first thing that you probably should do is look somewhere like Strong's or something to find the original intent of the word. And then when you look at the original intent of kind, it says unfailing love, loyal love, devotion, often based on a prior relationship, especially a covenant relationship. And that's the original word if you look up from Strong's. But as I begin to look up definitions, and I don't know, you just look for one thing or another, and then it turned out that I looked at this definition. Now, this is from Webster's 1828 dictionary. And of all the ones that I looked at, this one did something that I kept coming back to. Kindness, it says goodwill, benevolence. And this is the first one, you know, in the dictionary. There's one, two, three. This is the first one in the dictionary in Webster's 1828. It said goodwill, benevolence, that temper or disposition which delights in contributing to the happiness of others, which is exercised cheerfully in granting their wishes, supplying their wants, or alleviating their distress. And that kindly grabbed me, and I'm sure the Lord says here, you need to look at it. As time goes on, you can see where He tucked me. And then it ends with this: kindness ever accompanies love. So you can see how that now we've got line that goes from everlasting to everlasting, and then love that describes the kindness, if you will. It turns out, as I was studying for this, it seemed like I wasn't moving along very well. In fact, last week I still was not very far along. And then it turned out that my uncle died. And do you know that my uncle was the kindest man that you ever met? He wasn't perfect, but he was kind. He was kind to everybody, and little kids loved him because, you see, they're a good judge of character. They can tell, and they let you know also. And he was kind, and I preached his funeral, and the Lord helped me with this thought. I'll tell you something else about his Uncle Willie. Uncle Willie was in the hospital one day, and I was going to go see him. And I was kind of like a sister at church one day. She said, she described how she went to the hospital and the family was there. And she said, as she described it, she said, "I said, the Lord's going to make me tell my experience to them." Well, you see, a little bit different on Uncle Willie, because before I ever got there, I knew that it was my job to ask him had been saved. And when I asked him, he said, "Well, honey, I've been saved. I was saved when I was 20 years old. I'm sorry you didn't know." And it's strange how that when I asked him that, that he told me, and I didn't think, I remembered always he was saved, but I'll tell you, it made a big difference last week when I preached his funeral. So when the Lord wants you to do something, He wants you to do that at the time He wants it done. You know, I need to tell you something else, and I was thinking about this, and I don't hear other preachers telling this kind of stuff. I guess that's Satan talking. But I'll tell you one time that I did not do what the Lord wanted me to do. It was a revival at Maple Grove, and there was a young man back there that everybody had been praying for and was worried about, and I talked to him, and he basically, in a roundabout way, told me he was saved. And that was okay, but then when it came time for the end of the service, I was helping the young preachers of the church, and I felt like that I should ask him, his name is Matt, I should ask Matt to dismiss. Well, you know, I was helping the young preacher, and the young preacher was standing up, and I said, "Lord, get him to do that." Well, the Lord didn't get him to do that. Somebody else dismissed. And then we went ahead, and for a whole year, you know what I did? I drove by his house about once a week. And I had not asked him to do that. Now, you know, after a year, I'm pretty well ready to do that. If I could just get another chance to do that. And so what I did is I went to the revival the next year, a whole year later. I went to the revival and I said, "Lord, if you give me another chance, I'll do that." Now, see, I'm promising the Lord and I'm not even preaching. I'm not even helping in a revival. I'm just going to church. So I go and I sit down over there and, you know, he was not even there. I couldn't see him. Don't know where he was. So I thought, well, I don't know what I'm going to do now. Well, it turned out that as the service went along, you know, I'm kind of looking around. I saw him. He was back there. Okay, so now I think I can do this. But now what are you going to do? You're not the one that's going to say it's time to dismiss, and you're not the one that's going to describe what needs to be done. Somebody else is in charge of the service. But I'm going to make sure I don't miss this. I get right over there, and I stand, and I wait, and I'm looking around, because I don't want to miss this time. I've had a year of this. So I figured that what would happen is at the end of the service, I think it was Brother Curtis and Brother Bryson, I thought, now when they say it's time to dismiss, I'll say, wait, I got to do something. Now listen, if you don't do what the Lord wants you to do the first time, you may have trouble the second time. I kept waiting and kept waiting, and you know, when he got time for the end of the service, you know what Brother Bryson said? "We're just not going to be dismissed tonight." So by then, I'm up in the seat over there and I say, wait, I got to do something. And I explained to them how that I had not done what the Lord wanted me to do for a whole year. And I needed to ask somebody to dismiss. And I turned around and I said, "Brother Matt, would you dismiss? You think I got it there?" No, not yet. Right in front of Brother Matt, Brother Mac Clard was sitting. Brother Mac Clard gets up and he starts dismissing. "I can't do this." I said, "Wait." I said, "Not you. Brother Matt behind you." And he did. And then he told us he was saved. But you see, it's important, like my uncle had, I asked him a long time ago about being saved. So when it came time to talk about his kindness, then I knew about that. I wonder what it would have been like to preach his funeral if I hadn't known he'd have been saved. But I'll tell you what it was. It was one of the greatest blessings that I've had in a long time, preaching his funeral, because he was so kind. Going back to my subject, the Lord gave David and Jonathan great love for each other. And that love was, well, let me just read to you what it says. 1 Samuel 18:3, then Jonathan and David made a covenant. You see, that's what the kind of kindness we're talking about, because it refers back to a covenant. Because he loved him as his own son. So you see that love between Jonathan and David. And that was about 20 years before Mephibosheth was born. Now, kindness happens before you're born. You ever pray for your grandchildren before they're born? Do you think somebody didn't pray for you before you were born? But this was about 20 years before he was born. Then I'm using Usher's date, and about a year later, 1 Samuel 20:42, and Jonathan said to David, go in peace, for as much as we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord be between me and thee, and between my seed and thy seed forever. So you see, there was that covenant before he was ever born. And then when Saul and Jonathan were killed, and his son Mephibosheth was about 5 years old. Listen to this. And Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son that was lame of his feet. He was 5 years old when the tidings came of Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And it came to pass, as he made him haste to flee, that he fell, and he became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. Now, Mephibosheth went off into another country, because almost always, if you were the children or grandchildren of a king, and the king was killed and a new king came on, you just basically got killed. Well, here, about when he was about 13 years old, the Lord, I'm sure, caused this to come to David's mind, and he remembered Jonathan. Describes that in 2 Samuel 9:1. And David said, is there yet any that is left in the house of Saul, that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? There is one of the servants of Saul that was there and that had been in Saul's house, and he told him about Mephibosheth, and his name was Ziba. And here's what happened next. And the king said to Ziba, is there not yet any of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God to him? The first time he just said, I want to show the kindness. Now he wants to show the kindness of God unto him. And he said unto the king, Jonathan has yet a son which is lame on his feet. Now, he sent for him. I want to talk about the kindness of God here. There were three acts of kindness that you can look at, and we'll look at them first, and then we'll come back to them. The first time, because he had made a covenant with Jonathan, and he had him into his house and took care of him, he didn't kill him. When he saw him, he didn't kill him. Now, that was taken care of. That was a kindness, because almost always you would kill all the people in that other family. But he didn't kill him. The second, listen, he told him when he saw him. Now when Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, was coming to David, he fell on his face and did reverence. And Saul said, Mephibosheth, and he answered, behold thy servant. Now he was very humble when he came. And David said unto him, fear not, for I will surely show thee kindness for Jonathan thy father's sake, and will restore thee all the land of Saul thy father. And thou shalt eat bread at thy table, at my table continually. And he bowed himself and said, what is thy servant, that thou shouldest look upon such a dead dog as I am? Not only that, did he not kill him, he restored all of Saul's possessions to him. And then he said to him, you can eat at my table. So you see the kindness that he showed him there just when he first came to him. Now, the second time, a little bit different. The second time I want to look at is when he was about 25 years old, 12 years later after he first came there. He came there at 13. 25 years old, and he's at the palace, and David's out, and he meets Ziba. You remember Ziba was the servant of Saul. And he said, where's your master? And he went on, and here's what he said. And the king said, where is thy master's son? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he abideth at Jerusalem. For he said, today shall the house of Israel restore me the kingdom of my father. That's treason, see? And that almost certainly gets you killed. Well, he gave Ziba all of Saul's possessions. He just said, well, everything Saul had that was belonged to Mephibosheth, do you own that? He went home, back to the palace. Here's what happened. And Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king, and had neither dressed his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes, from the day the king departed until the day he came again in peace. And it came to pass, when he was come to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said unto him, wherefore wentest thou not with me? And he answered, O Lord, O king, my servant deceived me, for thy king, because thy servant is lame, and he has slandered thy servant unto my Lord. Here's what he said. But my Lord the king is an angel of God. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes. All of my father's house were but dead men before my Lord the king. Yet didst thou set the servant among them that did eat at thine own table. He said, what right therefore have I to cry any more unto the king? And the king said unto him, why speakest thou any more of the matter? I have said, you just take half the property and let Ziba have the other half. And he said unto the king, yea, let him take all, for as much as my lord the king is come again in peace unto his own house. He was pleased that he could just be there at the table. He spared him two times. The third time, listen to this. There was a time later when there was a famine in the country, and Saul inquired of the Lord, why? And the Lord answered that it was because that Saul in his zeal slew the Gibeonites to whom the Lord had sworn allegiance. So David said to them, what can I do? And they said, we don't want any of your silver or gold or a house, and we won't kill any of the men of Israel. Said, but let us have seven of Saul's sons so that we can hang them, and that will make us even. Here's who's the first thing you know. Who's the first person would come to mind? Well, he didn't choose Mephibosheth. He chose the other family members, but he didn't choose him. He just let him live there, eat at his table. So that's three times he spared his life. So I see three times that the Lord can look at the long picture down that long line. I thought about a line that there's a beginning and end, and sometimes you hear of a timeline. And even at a timeline, there's a beginning and end, but God's line, there's no beginning, no end. So I would like to look at three points on this line. You know, I didn't say timeline because the first point I want to look at is before the beginning time. Listen to this. Before the beginning of time, the Lord looked at me and you, and He saved us from death if we will listen. Listen to this. And being delivered by the determinate and counsel and foreknowledge of God, ye have taken and by the wicked hands have crucified and slain. In other words, the determinate and counsel and foreknowledge of God. Determinate counsel. Counsel means purpose. And you know, as we were looking, and I'm using Webster's 1828 for some of these definitions, but be very careful when you do that. Make sure you know what the meaning of the word is before you go look in Webster's. Because you see, if you just looked at counsel here, it's all the way down to the seventh meaning before you get to purpose. Because that really means that it was God's determinate purpose that Jesus died. Now you remember that the kindness was had to do with a covenant. a promise, an agreement, if you will. So you see, we are beneficiary of that a covenant or agreement or determinate purpose of God. So there's the first time that He looked at us and spared our life, if you will. As I was considering this, I got a question that I never really thought about before, because you see that as soon as Adam and Eve sinned, He said, "The day that you eat thereof, you will surely die." He could have just as easily, as soon as they did that they would have went to hell. And so there is something else His kindness gave to us. Not only did He give us He gave us the plan of salvation, if you will, but He also gave us time to go with it. So that's the first time that He was kind to us, if you will. And the next time He was kind to us. You see, He spared my life from the time I was lost till up I was saved. In my case, I don't think it was but 15 minutes, but that's beside the point. I had a friend told me last week about how that he was lost when he was about 11, didn't get saved till he was 17. And he said, you know, all that time, no one ever talked to him about being lost. And he went to church, and he was there, but nobody ever impressed. Either they were like me and didn't do it, or no one, the Lord didn't impress anyone. He said, but you know, I saw it coming. I saw her coming to me that day when she was going to talk to me. And he said, I stayed that day until I got saved. I like to hear people tell about being saved. Now, so you see, if I look at it, the first time the Lord saved me was before the... Now, saved not in terms, but spared me. I'll use that so that we understand. He spared Mephibosheth's life before... A promise before he was born, and he made his purpose before I was born. He spared me from eternal damnation. He made a plan for me to do that. The second time he spared me was in that in that bar down under the tobacco. You know, I like to tell my experience, but as I was considering this, I thought about somebody else, and there's a lot of thought in this one. I've thought about this several times. There was a man who went to church, a young boy went to church where we did. I didn't hear him tell, but you see, he was born deaf and he couldn't hear, so he couldn't talk. Times have changed, but at that time he couldn't talk. But he got saved. Now, there's a lot of things in there you can discuss, but he couldn't hear him, but he got saved. So it's time for him to tell his testimony. Couldn't talk. I'll tell it for you. You see, it doesn't take many words. But you see, the Lord took care of me again there in that barn, and He spared me. Now, I'll tell you the third thing I'd like to talk about. The third thing is God not only spared me, if you will, before I was ever born, His kindness towards me. He showed His kindness toward me there in the barn. And when I didn't do what He said at Maple Grove the first time, it never even entered my mind that I'd lose my salvation. You see, why wouldn't that be? Listen to this, I'll read it to you. For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor power, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. So you see, He spared me before I was ever born. He spared me when I was in that barn with great trouble. And He spared me every day since then when I didn't do what I needed to do. So you see, that line that started, for my part, a long time ago. From everlasting to everlasting. And then it's kind of like it came by and I got a hold of that line in that bar that day. But you know, there's no end to it now. So that description of that line lasting forever, and that line of kindness that he gave to me before when I was there, and every time that I don't do what he wants, he's still kind to me. Because what do we deserve? You see, Mephibosheth said, I'm just like no better than a dog. I'm just nothing. Don't deserve to live, but his kindness, he lets that line keep going on. Now I want to get back to Webster a minute. You see, that first picture I gave you is what you might look at me from God's point of view. God looking at me says, I showed you my kindness before you were ever, before creation, when I agreed for my son to die for you. I showed you my kindness that day in the barn, and all of those times that you failed me, I still showed you my kindness. It's love. Now, that's from God's point of view. But you know, from our point of view, it's a much shorter view. It's a more focused view. And I believe this is why that Webster's thought kept coming back to me, his definition. His definition says, gratifying their wishes, supplying their wants, alleviating their distress. And then when you look at the meaning of those words, I didn't make any difference which order, but I chose this order because it fits what my thought is. And I look at kindness, and then for us as people that need to be saved and are wicked and away from God and separated from God, I see three things. The first one is wants or deficiency. The second one is a desire. And the third one is distress. You've been through those? Yeah, if you've been saved, you've been through all three of those. The first one now is to let you know that you're deficient. You see, that's the first thing that happens to us is we have to recognize that we're deficient when we stand in front of God. We have to recognize we're lost. That's what that means. And considering that, you can say this is where God begins to let me understand about that. And we got into some discussions about that, and let me take you through it very fast. The Scriptures teach, and everyone knows, that you can look around and you can see God's handiwork. And then we all know that we hear the gospel and we understand it's true. And then we become convicted. Now, you see, I described something that was you can understand. But I want to go back to looking around and seeing God's handiwork and knowing that there's a God. I dealt with this a little bit, and I want you to think about this now, because you can look at all of these. It says you can look around and you're without excuse because you should have known. Well, it also says that our mind is enmity against God, which would indicate that we just probably couldn't figure it out on our own. And then I begin this question. You remember how the Spirit was breaking your heart just before you got saved? I want to ask you a question, and I want you to back up just a little bit. You know the distress you were in when you were just before you got saved. Greatest distress you'll ever be in. Then let's move up just a little bit more. When you first recognized that you were lost, and why were you in that great distress? Because the Spirit was convicting you of what we really are, convicting us of what we really are. Back up just a little bit. Before that, the Spirit let us know that gospel we heard is true, and that Jesus died for us. And then it occurred to me, and I'm just going to ask you the question. When it says you can look around, His Spirit says, you look, I made that. I probably couldn't figure it out. In fact, there's a lot of people on this earth that looks around and says, oh, I can figure that out. And we came from a frog, or you know the story. So you see that God's Spirit will help you even from the beginning when you begin to seek Him. So those three things that we got the deficiency, recognized we were lost, we got the desire that the Spirit gave us, and then we got in great distress before we got saved. And you remember that definition ends, ever kindness ever accompanies love. I got one more picture. This picture, going back to Uncle Willie's funeral. And sometimes you preach things and you say, okay, I did that, and you don't understand. But there are some people that came to Uncle Willie's funeral that heard me preach that I'm probably the only missionary Baptist preacher they ever heard preach. But you see, that wasn't the only time I preached to him. I preached to him when his wife, he called her sweetie, when she died, I preached her funeral. And I preached my grandmother's funeral. And I might be wrong, Brother Don preached my mother's funeral, so they might have heard him too. But you see, I'm convinced, based on what the Lord did, that they looked at this religion we have as something that I'll describe to you. Now, I want to go back. You remember I used Webster. Now, I didn't understand why that this Webster definition kept coming to me. But then I did a little bit more. If we look at Webster, he began work in 1900. He published his first dictionary about 1908. He published the 1828 dictionary in 1828. Now, he wrote a letter. He wrote a letter in 1808. He wrote this letter and he was telling about things that had happened to him. He described how that this was the second great awakening, and he grew up, and at first he got off out in the world, and then he convinced that he should live a life of virtue. He should live a good life, he decided. And he wanted, and a person that could write that, prepare that first dictionary, I think it had, 20,000 words, 30,000 words. Just in case you're wondering, average person has about a 10,000 word vocabulary. Said it didn't matter what language, that's what most people have. So you see that he wrote that second one, he had 70,000 words in it. So you see, he had lots of words. And the reason I go back to that is do you often wonder if you had the ability to describe better God's Word, that we could do a better job? Well, I don't know if we could or not, because I'm not sure that there's anybody that's got a better testimony than a young man that couldn't talk. But, you know, in that funeral, and I got to this, reading part of his letter that he wrote to his friend. And here is somebody that has a vocabulary that's great. And he is going to talk about the kindness of God. He won't use that word, but listen to this. Now, he'd already told, and I finally got back to my thought about all this family. And here's what the same thing that Webster said about his wife and girls as they were going to the Second Great Awakening and hearing all this. He said, I stress to them the importance of a rational religion. In other words, you need to understand how to figure all this out, and don't get on all excited about everything. He described that, and I can't read the whole letter to you, but I'll go down to this part. After he had heard, and he was having trouble if he would ever go back there or not, but apparently he went there enough. During this time, my mind continued, and this was to a man in 1808, Mr. Dawes. And I'm way down in the letter now. During this time, my mind continued to be more and more agitated in a matter wholly unusual and to me unaccustable. See, he used a lot of words I wouldn't use, but he does a good job. I had indeed short composure, but at all times of the day and the midst of other occupation, I was suddenly seized with impressions which called my mind irresistibly to religious concerns and to the awakening, that gospel he'd been hearing. These impressions include a degree of remorse for my conduct, not of the distressing kind which often attends convictions, but something which appeared to be reproof. He's trying to understand what it is. He said, these impressions I attempted to remove by reasoning with myself. He said, I tried to figure this out and endeavoring to keep my mind quiet. Brother Don Johnson had a grandson, granddaughter in the car. Both of them lost. She was under conviction a little bit. the older boy, he said to her, "Just don't think about it. That's what I do." Webster said the same thing, "Endeavoring to quiet my mind by persuasion that my opposition to my family and awakening was not a real opposition to irrational religion, but to enthusiasm or false religion. I just didn't want them to get all excited. I continued some weeks in this situation, utterly unable to quiet my own mind without resorting to the only source of peace and consolation. These impressions, however, grew stronger, till at length I could not pursue my studies without frequent interruptions. My mind was suddenly arrested without any previous circumstances of the time to draw it to the subject, as it were fastened to the awakening and upon my own conduct. I closed my books, yielded to the influence which could not be resisted or mistaken, and was led by spontaneous impulse to repentance, prayer, and entire submission and surrender of myself to my Maker and Redeemer. My submissions appeared to be cheerful and was soon followed by that peace of mind which the world can neither give nor take away." A couple of paragraphs later, here's what he said. "In the month of April last, I made a profession of faith. And this most solemn and effective all my transactions of my life. I was accompanied with my two eldest daughters. While I felt a degree of compunction which I had not sooner dedicated myself to God, it was with heartfelt delight that I could present myself before my Maker and said, 'Here am I with the children Thou hast given me.'" So you see, whether it's this or all of those words that man can speak, both describe the same kindness from God that He started on us, if you can use that started term, before the beginning of time. Then He continued that kindness through all of those generations, so that when I got to that barn, it was there ready for me, like it was for Him when He was at that place and stopped His studies, and was for you wherever you are. And remember this, and we ourselves were also sometimes foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving divers lusts and pleasures, living in malice and ever hateful and hating one another. But after that, the kindness and love of God and our Savior toward man appeared." That kindness is what makes us have this great peace. And I'll read his last sentence one more time. "My submission appeared to be cheerful and was soon followed by that peace of mind which the world can neither give nor take away. That's the kindness of my God. Thank you.